continue with the second chapter, no? Starting from verse 39 onwards. So I'll do a recap of what has happened to me in the second chapter. The first section was Arjuna talking about his last doubt, indecision, and then surrendering. Then 11 to 30, Lord Krishna described on the basis of Atma Gyan that for the body which is anyway destructible, compassion is meaningless. So this way he counters Arjuna's argument of compassion. And then from 31 to 38, the second argument is of enjoyment, which also Arjuna counters. So Krishna counters by explaining how by karma kaan you will enjoy either way, whether you win or you lose. So now, often people who read the Bhagavad Gita, even scholars, whether Indian or Western, they find it sometimes riddled with contradictions. Now the reason why it appears contradictory is because there is not contradiction but progression. So in the Gita what you will find actually is not contradiction but progression. Progression means from one level to higher level. And when the higher level is talked about, often the lower level is contextualized and its limitation is told. So at such a time, the same thing which was taught earlier will later be minimized. And that's why it might appear like a contradiction. So now let's come to verse 39 now. Came to this word, this verse. See, one of the characteristics of the Vedic literature is that there can be one word which has many meanings, and different people have different thoughts coming in their mind when they hear that a particular word. For example, in the West, if we use the word yoga, the primary thought that comes into people's mind is asanas, postural yoga. Whereas yoga is primarily a process for connection with God. So in this particular verse 39, Lord Krishna will introduce some terms which he has not used earlier. And those terms' meanings are quite interesting to analyze. It's an important transition verse. Let us recite it together. Esha te bhita sankhe buddhi yoge tvaimam shruno buddhya yukto yaya partha karma bandhan prahasyati.
Now listen as I explain it in terms of working without fruitive results. O son of Pritha, when you act in such knowledge, you can free yourself from the bondage of work.
So, abhihita means told already. What have I told to you? Sankhya. So Sankhya is, as we know, this chapter is called as Sankhya Yoga according to some people. So Sankhya, Vishnu Chakra Thakur explains this, Samyak Rupena Khyate Iti Sankhya. Khyate means that it explains. Samyak Rupena, that it explains in total. It's called Sankhya. So, there are six systems of philosophy in Indian thought, and Sankhya is one of them. Sankhya basically talks about analysis of material elements. Sankhya. What does this material world comprise of? So often Sankhya is thought of as atheistic, in the sense that Sankhya does not necessarily talk about God. So normal Sankhya has either 24 or 25 elements. 24 are the elements of material existence and 25 is the Purusha. So the Purusha is generally considered to be the soul. But as well as Purusha and there is Purushottama. So in the Mahabharata, there is a discussion how there are different Sankhyas. There are three kinds of Sankhya. They call it 24 Sankhya, 25 Sankhya, 26 Sankhya. That means how many elements they include. So Suhota Maharaj wrote a book on the six systems of philosophy, and he described in these six systems, all of you know the six systems, the names at least? Okay, Sankhya, then Nyaya, Mimamsa, Vaisheshika, Yoga, and last, we are belonging to which part? Vedanta, yes. So he describes that these six systems are a progression. How a progression? First, one starts with this material world and starts analyzing. Sankhya, what is this comprising of? Oh, it comprises of just some basic elements. You know, earth, water, fire, air, ether. They cannot give me any enjoyment. So that analysis is there. Then after that, one goes further and one comes to Vaisheshika. Vaisheshika is basically analysis of atoms and molecules. And even these elements are made up of atoms and molecules. So we go for first, we say, okay, this world is made of earth, water, fire, air. But the earth, water, fire, air are also made of ultimately molecules. Now, of course, again, the Vedic concept of Anu and Paramanu is different from the modern concept. And we won't go into that difference here. But then, after that, once one understands, okay, this material world is all, it is not what it seems to be. Then one comes to Mimamsa. Okay, then let me go somewhere higher. So Mimamsa is basically karma kanda. That's why it's a karma Mimamsa. It's for raising oneself to higher planets. And often God is considered to be subordinate to sacrifices. That means if we do sacrifices, we'll automatically get the results. And one doesn't necessarily need God for that. This was the philosophy that Lord Krishna told to Nanda Maharaj in the Govardhan Leela. So then, after going up and down, coming down from heaven, one starts realizing, oh, this doesn't make me happy. I strive for something lasting, something eternal. So, for then one comes to yoga. Yoga means, in Mimamsa also the eternal objective is not yet identified. In Mimamsa, one adheres for heaven, but heaven is not transcendent. Heaven still keeps coming back. Yoga is one starting from physical disciplines to mental disciplines to aim for an eternal goal. And then lastly, one comes to Vedanta. Vedanta is when one actually understands the ultimate purpose is Bhagavan, Sri Krishna, Vedaishcha Sarvair, Ahameva Vedya. Now, Nyaya was originally a system of logic. Nyaya literally means logic. Now, logic is something which underlies all arguments of everyone. That means, anyone has to argue, we have to use logic. For example, now if we are arguing with, say, Buddhists or Muslims who don't accept Vedic authority, then how do we argue with them? If we quote scripture, they're not going to accept. So we have to argue based on logic. So, rules of logic are what is talked about in Nyaya. But what happened is, over the centuries, each of these six, which were progressive schools of thought, became independent and competing schools of thought. So they are progressive, one by one. Just like you say Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda and Bhakti are progressive. But sometimes there is competition between them also. In the sense of the mind, the impersonalists say, no, the impersonal Brahman is higher. So, you know, Jnana Kanda is basically for attaining impersonal Brahman. But impersonal Brahman is a transition to ultimately the supreme law, personality of God. But when Jnana Kanda is thought of as the supreme section of the Vedic literature and the Brahman is made above Bhagavan, then it becomes highly problematic. So similarly, the six systems of philosophy are progressive originally, but they have become competing and independent now. And The current understanding of Sankhya is from one Kapil Dev, whom Prabhupada repeatedly points out that he is not the bona fide teacher, and the real Kapil Dev is the son of Devahuti. That's why, in the initial days, when the book was published, Teaching of Lord Kapila, so there Prabhupada had to put the book caption, subtitle over the son of Devahuti. So, at that time Rameshwar was the book distribution, book production in charge. He said, Prabhupada, the subtitle looks very odd.
So for example, if you write, Teachings of Jesus, the son of Mary.
And if you write, Teachings of someone. What is the meaning of having the son? Is it a taunt or is it, what is it? The Western people will not be able to understand. Prabhupada said, keep it as it is. You won't understand.
You don't understand why we are kicking. Because Prabhupada wanted to differentiate this Kapila from the atheistic Kapila.
He said, keep the son of Devahuti over there.
So,
what the Bhagavatam and to some extent the Bhagavad Gita also does is, actually the 66 schools of philosophy are there, and currently as they are understood in society, they are thought of as independent schools of thought. But the Bhagavatam will show how all these six ultimately lead to bhakti. And from the point of view of bhakti, they are actually attaining their completion and culmination. So that's what is done with respect to, say for example, yoga in, is done with respect to Sankhya by Lord Kapil Dev. You know, he shows how Sankhya ultimately leads to bhakti. So, that's why if we read this purport, this is one of the longest purports of this chapter, 2.39. So Prabhupada seems to say something contradictory over it. In the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada says, one place that, actually, this Sankhya has got nothing to do with the atheistic Sankhya. And then later on he says, actually this Sankhya, and the Sankhya taught by Kapil Dev, it's all same, and it is all Bhakti Yoga.
So it might seem a little confusing if we don't understand the context.
So first of all, I think this Sankhya has got nothing to do with the Sankhya philosophy of the atheist Kapila. So Prabhupada is saying that, this Krishna was long before him, and Krishna did not bother to speak about him also. And then he says two Sankhya is explained by Lord Kapil Dev about it. And then after that, later on he will say, again he says, one should not misunderstand the Sankhya or Manchurian to have any connection with the atheist Sankhya. Yeah, here. See, what is the Lord Krishna makes an analytical description of the soul just to bring Arjuna to the point of Buddhi Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. Therefore, Lord Krishna's Sankhya and Lord Kapila's Sankhya, as described in the Bhagavatam, are one and the same. So that means what Srila Prabhupada is saying is that a Kapila talks about Sankhya and an atheistic Kapila who talks about Sankhya. But these two are very different. Now, atheistic Kapila talks about, the Kapil Dev, son of Devahuti, talks about Sankhya in such a way that Sankhya leads to Bhakti. And therefore, when Lord Krishna is using the word Sankhya, he is referring not to the atheistic Kapila, he is using it to the theistic Kapila. So, and that's the Prabhupada quote from the next chapter, Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga Sadvala Prabhadanti Pandita. Fifth chapter, this verse comes. Yeah, correct. No, because just like we have the Mimamsakas, the karma, the Yajic Brahmanas, they follow the same process, but because they don't know the goal of Krishna, they actually get misled. I mean, Krishna comes right in front of them, they don't even achieve it. So now when Krishna is saying, I have described Sankhya to you till now. Eshate abhidhaha samkhya. That means I have described the knowledge of body and soul. He has not gone much into Sankhya in terms of analysis of material elements. That analysis Krishna does in two places in the Bhagavad Gita, 7.4 to 6, where Bhumirapon Adhoya is described, and then 13.6 and 7, Mahabhutani Ankara Buddha Vyaktani Vachan. So, but Sankhya is briefly described in these places. And so first Sankhya is a new word, which we now discuss and understood what it means. The two new words are Buddhi and Yoga. Now they are new in what sense? That they are not being talked about in the Bhagavad Gita till now. Because they will be familiar. In the word Yoga, Krishna will refer to it in almost a defining sense, three times in later verses from the section 47 to 54. There we will understand what Krishna wants to say by Yoga in this context. Now, Buddhi Yoga is not one of the string of yoga, isn't it? There you have karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, but there is no Buddhi Yoga as such. So, what is he referring to as Buddhi Yoga? Now, in this, there is, like, as I said, a lot of difference of opinion, and there is a difference of opinion between our acharyas also. So, Chakravarti Pad says actually this Buddhi Yoga refers to bhakti. And Baldevi Dao says the word refers to Ishkamkarma Yoga. And actually, in one sense, both are true. And this is a very important point which we will have to discuss now, that Srila Prabhupada has a particular way of translation. And what does Srila Prabhupada do in his translation? He generally, this is something which Prabhupada has often been criticized for, that sometimes he translates Karma Yoga as Bhakti Yoga. He translates Karma Yoga as devotional service. So this, when we come to the 3.3, we will see that, that Prabhupada doing that, and he does it many other places also. So some scholars feel very angry with this. How can Prabhupada do like that? And on top of it, he calls it Bhagavad Gita as it is. You can say that he is changing it. And then on top of it, he is calling it Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, actually, Prabhupada has a particular purpose. We discussed this in Aishwarya's course also. See, Srila Prabhupada had a formidable challenge in presenting Bhagavad Gita. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, one of his, he sees main objectives was to show what the Prabhupada was trying to do when he was translating. So he said, Prabhupada is not just translating a text, Prabhupada is translating a culture. He's translating a culture. Now how a text was understood in a culture and how a culture was built around a text, that's what Prabhupada is representing. So now if you look at that point of view, now the original audience of the Bhagavad Gita, that is Arjuna, and the audience whom Prabhupada was presenting the Bhagavad Gita, they were radically, diametrically, historically, geographically, culturally, politically, religiously, intellectually, linguistically, you know, what difference is God there? You know, their understanding of God is the biblical God who throws thunderbolt down on sinful people. Historically, you know, they had no understanding of Krishna or Ram or Hanuman or anything like that. Historically, geographically, intellectually, they had no understanding. So what did Srila Prabhupada do? Srila Prabhupada emphasized in giving one consistent message to Bhagavad Gita. So, now in one sense, it's, you can say that it's technically wrong. Karma Yoga cannot be translated as Bhakti Yoga. But, we see Karma Yoga culmination in Bhakti Yoga, that we will discuss as the flow goes on. So in that sense, the perfection of Karma Yoga is Bhakti Yoga, and Prabhupada translates is not wrong that way. But more importantly, they say that Krishna ultimately rejects all the lower paths. Sarva dharmān parityajyamānekam sharanam vraja. So he says, all that I told you, forget it, Arjuna. Why did I hear all this? I have to rack my brain completely to hear all this, just forget everything else. No, actually, if Krishna just told Sarva dharmān parityajyamānekam sharanam vraja at the beginning, it would not have been intellectually persuasive. So Krishna gives elaborate answer and then gives a crystal clear instruction. So in that sense, Krishna only cancels all the lower yogas and lower dharmas and gives the highest. So what the Prabhupada does is, he gives us the conclusion throughout. So what we will do when we study the Bhagavad Gita is, we will try to see the kinetic flow. So when it's Karma Yoga, we will understand it as Karma Yoga and we will analyze it as Karma Yoga. But along with that, we will also try to see how Prabhupada's translation of Karma Yoga as Bhakti Yoga is not wrong. Because in that very section, Krishna will always give hints of Bhakti. Although Krishna talks about Bhakti at the end, Krishna talks about Bhakti throughout the Gita. And at the end, conclusively, unambiguously, he talks about it. So, here, Eshate Bhita Sankhya, we are discussing this verse. Buddhi Buddhya Yukto. So now, this Buddhi Yoga, what does it mean? Prabhupada translates it as Krishna consciousness, or devotional service. But Buddhi Yoga itself is like a stretchable term. It's a stretchable term in the sense that any activity done with Buddhi for a spiritual purpose, for eternal purpose, can be called as Buddhi Yoga. And Krishna will use this Buddhi Yoga word to refer to Karma Yoga also, we see in one of the later verses. So Buddhi Yoga refers to anything from Karma Yoga up to Bhakti Yoga. So if it refers to Karma Yoga, it can refer to Jnana Yoga, it can refer to Bhakti Yoga. Now, can anyone think of any famous verses where Buddhi Yoga this word comes? Very well known. Dami Buddhi Yoga. So there Buddhi Yoga clearly refers to that Bhakti, the devotional intelligence given by Krishna by which one comes back to him. Similarly, for Buddhi Yoga also comes in the 18th chapter. Chetasa sarva karmani mai sanyasya natvara buddhi yoga upashitya machitaha satatam bhava. That there, in all activities, announcing the results to me, depending on me, with buddhi yoga, just you will come back. Practice buddhi yoga and you will come back. And there also buddhi yoga has a very devotional context. So in that sense, Prabhupada using buddhi yoga and bhakti yoga is not wrong. So it's a stretchable term which can mean anything from Nishkam Karma Yoga to Bhakti Yoga. And you will see specifically how it can also apply to Bhakti Yoga. Buddhir Jnana Asam Moha, the 10th chapter, different qualities have been described. So, Buddhir Jnana Asam Moha, they are differentiated. And Prabhupada says knowledge means to know things as they are, and intelligence means to see things in proper perspective. So, it's a significant difference. Knowledge means to know things as they are. This is earth, this is water, this is fire, this is air. This is knowledge. Intelligence means to see things in their proper perspective. This is less important, this is more important. So intelligence is more of like dynamic knowledge. It's like, okay, I have to follow a particular rule, but I should not do Niyamagraha in that rule. Which is more important. Like, Radha Maharaj defines intelligence in a very beautiful way. He says, intelligence means to understand what is essential and what is peripheral. And to hold on to essential and to let go of the peripheral. That is thing. That's elaboration of what Prabhupada is saying. To see things in perspective. Yeah, so Krishna is that. So, Jnana itself is, in one sense, dry. Shushka Jnana. We don't say Shushka Buddhi. That word doesn't come into the picture so much. Yeah, Buddhi means, you know, how to act. In life, more of dynamic Jnana. How to make decisions to see things. This is more important, this is important. And an active perspective. So, now, karma bandhan prahasya. See, so Arjuna's argument was that I will be bound by karma if I fight. So, no, you will not be bound. Karma bandhan prahasya. See. So now, here onward, as I said, there seems to be apparent contradiction. Earlier Krishna was talking about this will give you sukha, this will cause you dukkha. But then he said in 38, sukhe dukhe samai krutva. So from here onward, this section is doing two things. Okay. 39 to 53, fight but without sinful reactions. So that is, so basically they are describing Nishkam Karma Yoga. But along with that, it is also explaining how Nishkam Karma Yoga is superior to Karma Kanda. That is the predominant theme. So just now Krishna had talked about Karma Kanda. So now he is going to explain how Nishkam Karma Yoga is superior to Karma Kanda. So how is the chapter flowing now? First Krishna gave knowledge of body and soul. And then after that, he said, the first application is, okay, if you understand you are the soul, then you can go to heaven and enjoy. But even heaven is temporary. So now you should go higher. So in verse 14, But what is Amruta is not very clear. Because Amruta can be even that you can go to heaven and drink so much, and that can also be called Amruta. So here, this contrast is a very important thing. And that's how verses 40, 41 onwards make sense. So this is important. Well known verse.
Neha bhikramana shosti pratyavayo na vidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya rayate mahato bhaya.
What is trayate mahato bhayat? Fear of going down to lower species. So, in this path there is no loss or diminution. So, Chaturvarti path is a slightly elaborate explanation of this. Neha abhikrama nashosti. He says that if you start it but you don't complete it, still there is no loss. And even if you give it up, there is no sin. When if you give it up, there is no sin. In karmakanda, if you start a yajna and you drop it halfway, not only does it give no reaction, no result positive, it may be involved in the sinful activity also. This is there nothing like this. This is the start of the differentiation between, now Krishna is differentiating between what he told with the 31 to 38 and what he is going to tell now. So this whole section is difference between karmakanda and karma yoga. Same thing we are talking about in the next verse.
व्यवसायात्मिका बुद्धि एकेह कुरु नंदन बहुशाखा हि अनंताश्च बुद्धयो व्यवसायिना.
Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, their aim is one. O beloved child of the Gurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is
Krishna. Sometimes Prabhupada says poetic translation. Kuru nandana is the descendant of the beloved child of the Guru. It's a very sweet translation. Now, Prabhupada's purport focuses mostly on Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, aka Kuru Nandana. And he talks about it as meaning being fixed in the instruction of the spiritual master. And in this, he is following Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. As you know, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's purport is very beautiful, so we'll just read that briefly.
What he is saying is,
so let's read this. This sort of inspired Prabhupada very much.
Who would like to read this?
Yeah.
Moreover, among all types of individuals,
my sadhana.
My sadhana is to follow the feet of the Lord, to remember and glorify Him as instructed by my Guru. That is also my goal, sadhya. It is my life sustaining medicine, for I cannot give up the sadhana and sadhya. This is my most desirable object, my duty, and nothing else is my duty. Nothing else is desired. Even in dreams, there may be happiness or sorrow, samsara may be destroyed or may not be destroyed. That is no loss for me. Let there only be resolute intelligence in your bhakti.
Hmm. That's destroyed or not destroyed. It doesn't matter. I just want to be fixed in this. So, actually, the Vedic scriptures are primarily karmakanda scriptures from the numerical point of view. As you know, more than 90% of the scripture is karmakanda. Why is it like that? Because the Vedic scriptures are kalpatara, a desire fulfilling dream, and most people have materialistic desires. Therefore, reciprocally, they have given a lot of descriptions of how one can attain material fruits. So, and because there are so many different fruitive activities described in their respective results, therefore, a person's mind is affected. They can lose, I can get this property, I can get this spouse, I can get this child, I can get this, I can get that. And that's why bahushaka yanandash. By bhakti, only one promise is there. What? We now conserve Krishna now, and that's what we will do eternally. So that is Ekeha Kuru Nandana. So Karmakanda will lead to Bahushaka. Because we were worshipping to go to Swarga and be with Indra, and then you think that, oh, but Surya also is very nice. And there also there is so many enjoyment. So I want to worship Surya, I want to worship this, I want to worship that. So that's the difference. between one-pointed intelligence and multi-branched intelligence. So Bhakti Yoga brings about and requires a one-pointed intelligence. Karma Kanda naturally leads to a multi-branched intelligence. Is it clear? Now, Krishna will explicitly explain what he has said more. Earlier he said that, oh, be equipoise in happiness and distress, don't bother about. Now, here this is till now, Bahushakhai Anantashya is not clear. What is he talking about? Arjuna has this question. Oh, in this process there is no loss or elimination, in this process you have one-pointed intelligence. What is this process you are talking about? It's intriguing. For Arjuna, but the process will not be described till now. So then again he contrasts. He says, there is another process of karma kaya which he condemns. So, translation. So, Veda Vadarataha, we discussed this in the Ishopishad also. Now, Pushpitam Vacham, they are flowery words of the Vedas. So, Krishna talks about this at the 15th chapter also when he is talking about the tree of material existence. And he says that actually the leaves are the Vedic scriptures, the Vedic hymns. And normally from the leaves, what happens? The fruits come, the flowers come. First, and from the flowers come the fruits. So, from the leaves of the Vedic scriptures will come the flowers of dharma, artha, kama, moksha. So here family is talking about artha and kama, bhoga and aishwarya. Aishwarya is artha and bhoga is kama. But actually what happens is, this key says bound in mental existence. Dharma, artha, kama, generally very few people go to moksha. So, in karma kanda there is dharma artha kama, in jnana kanda there is moksha, but bhakti is beyond all this. So Krishna will talk about bhakti, and therefore he says these people are avipashchitaha. Vipashchitaha means discriminating. They are not able to discriminate properly, and they do a lot of elaborate pompous rituals but with no tangible result. And then this is a famous verse which we often use for understanding how some reality keeps us distracted from Krishna consciousness. So now, the condemnation of Vedic sense gratification also applies to non-Vedic sense gratification. Because sense gratification is sense gratification. So, sense gratification may be obtained through Vedas, or it may obtain without the Vedas. But the condemnation of the fallacies, the limitations of that are the same for everyone. So we'll decide this one. Bhogaishwarya prasattanam tayapaharita chetasam vyavasayatmika buddhi samadhav navibhiyate. So, another new word is coming to this samadhi. So, what is this word? Samadhav navibhiyate. They will not get samadhan, they will not be satisfied, they will not be fixed, they will not be one point. Now what is the context? For Arjuna, see, Kshatriya's life, often the primary goal is Bhoganeshwarya. He has a lot of wealth and he goes to Swayamvar and get a lot of queens. So Bhoganeshwarya. He says if you are attracted to Bhoganeshwarya, then the one point determination for this path will not come for you. So then Arjuna gets the question, Krishna, but the Vedas talk about all these things. Just go beyond the Vedas. Reject the Vedas. Maybe Krishna is not waiting for the 18th chapter to say, try to say, write down all these things. Just go beyond the Vedas. That's the next verse. It's a very strong word in that sense. Traigunya Vishaya Veda Traigunya Bhavarjuna Nirdvandho Nitya Sattvastho Yoga Kshema Atmavan. Chakravarti Pad gives a huge analysis to explain that this Traigunya Bhavarjuna has to refer only to bhakti. Because he says even in jnana there is support, there is not transcendence. Now, relatively speaking, in Jnana, Rajo and Tamoguna are less. But still, Sattvaguna is very much there. And that's why Buddha Gita describes in 11th canto that ultimately, the Jnani has to give up his Jnana also to surrender to Krishna and become a Bhakta. So, Jnani, by his Jnana, renounces this material world. He renounces Bhoga and Aishwarya. But ultimately, he has to renounce even the Jnana to become a Bhakta. So, because Jnana, Sattva, Sanjayate, Jnanam. In the 14th chapter, Krishna says that the mode of goodness produces knowledge. So, this Traigunya Bhavarjuna means that he is talking about pure bhakti. He is not talking about anything less than that. Now, in a more generic sense, so in this sense, what Prabhupada is doing, calling bhakti yoga and devotional service, is perfectly okay. Because you cannot be transcended to three modes without. Now, if you want to take a more general sense, we can say that if somebody is aiming for liberation or achieving liberation, attain moksha, then he is beyond the modes. So, in that sense, Buddha Yoga can also refer to Jnana Yoga. In that sense, Nistraigunya Bhavajna basically means that go beyond material desires. Go beyond material desires. Mirdvango Nitya Sattva. So, Nitya Sattva. Nitya Sattva is like Shuddha Sattva. And then, if you see, Bhagavad Gita has so many subtle correlations. Especially if you study Sanskrit carefully. Mir Yoga Kshemam Atmama. Don't worry about Yoga Kshema. And where does Yoga Kshema come? So Krishna has told you should be, don't worry about Yoga Kshema. But then he will say, how you do it? Ananya Chintayantam. That Yoga Kshema, I will take care of it. That he will reveal in 9.22. But here he is saying, Mir Yoga Kshemam Atmama. So, what is the difference between Jnana Yoga and Bhakti with Jnana? The difference is that in Jnana Yoga, the goal is not known. That the goal is Krishna is not known. Whereas, Bhakti with Jnana. Now we are all in trying to acquire Jnana so that we can practice Bhakti. The difference is that we are knowing the goal as Krishna. So here, what Krishna is telling is not revealing himself right now. If you see, Mom has not come even once in the Bhagavad Gita till now. He had to send it to me, think about me, it's not coming at once till now. The only time it will come in the chapter is in 2.61. Chakravarti Pathan, this is first a drop of bhakti that Krishna drops in the chapter. So, look, in that sense, Krishna is telling the process of bhakti without using the word bhakti and without using himself. So, whatever he is telling, it is very difficult to practice without bhakti. And it will be really easy to practice with bhakti. So, in that sense, Prabhupada's translation is perfectly valid. Because he may be talking technically about karma, Nishtham Karma Yoga over here. But it's more easy to practice this from the bhakta. And then Krishna goes on and says, so till now, Krishna is talking in very enigmatic terms. He is not explaining what the process is. This process, it leads to eternal desires, and it is beyond the Vedas. And people who follow the Vedas are less intelligent, and you have to be one pointed, and you have to transcend the modes. What do I have to do? So what do I actually have to do? So Krishna keeps him in suspense for one more verse. And he glorifies this process all the more. So, translation. So, Brahman is Vijayanataha. So, Brahman here means not just a caste Brahman, but a person who knows the purpose of the Vedas. So, this verse is a correlation to 2.41 was Bahushakha Yanantascha. So there are many, many shakhas, many, many branches to the interior. So all those branches are here compared to different wells. So okay, whatever you can get from different wells, you can get from one river only. So like that, whatever you want from different material, different fruitive activities, you can get it all and more through bhakti. So here, what are the wells compared to? They are compared to the karmakanda rituals for achieving some specific result. And the river is compared to the process of bhakti. By which everything that one can get from the karmakanda rituals, one will get that and more. Am I speaking in a very abstract term or are things clear? Yes? These are the conceptual section. And now comes one of the most quoted and least understood shloka of the Bhagavad Gita. Let's recite it.
कर्मण्येवाधिकारस्ते मा फलेषु कदाचन मा कर्म फलहेतुर्भूर्मा ते सङ्गोऽस्तु कर्मणि.
So, this verse is talking about four things, and most people quote only the first part. You have a right to do your duty. Karma neva adhikarasti. But that is only one part of it. After that, you have a right to do your duty, you hardly don't have a right to the fruits. Now, I study so that I get marks. Now I work so that I get my salary. If I'm not going to get attached, why should I work at all? For most people, the phala is the motive for the karma. And then Krishna is giving one reason. Don't think yourself to be the cause of the result of your work. And not only should you not be attached to the work, you shouldn't even think that I did it. Ma karma phala hai. You are saying that I should not get the fruit, I should not get the credit for the fruit also, then I will not do the work only. No, I am not allowed to not do the work. Mate sangosva karma, you have to do the work. So, what is the logic of this? This, Krishna will actually explain in the 18th chapter, where he identify the five factors of action. And there he will describe that there are five factors which produce the result. And one who does not recognize the other factors and thinks he is the only doer, he is ignorant. So, here the key thing is why one should not be attached to the fruits. Because if one thinks I have produced the fruits, then one becomes bound by karma. But if one understands that actually, what are the five factors? Does anyone know? Adhishthanam tatha karta, karanam cha prithak vidha, vividhash cha prithak cheshta, daivam cha yvatra panchamam. So, he describes, adhishtha is the body. Adhishthanam tatha karta. So, adhishthanam is the body or the sphere of activity. So now if I am a singer, and now, but suppose I am a singer, then first of all I need the body. Then there is a soul present in the body. Karta. Then after that there is karanam. Karanam means my body may be healthy, but my specific sense is required for singing. Or if I am speaking, my specific sense of speaking has to be active. Karanam. And then prithak vidha, there are different senses for different activity. So we need this a particular senses. So now, this particular cricketer, you know, he just swings the bat and contacts the ball and sends for sixes. And then next, he just gets out for a duck, middle stump and knock back. And he says he's out of form. But why is he out of form? You know, if he had his choice, he would always like to be in form. Isn't it? So that means, although he has his karan, he has that particular, you know, he has the footwork, the hand movements, the eyesight. But they are not entirely under his control. And then there is vividhash prithak cheshta. Cheshta is endeavor. So, now even after we have a particular talent, for it to develop, we require to be cheshta. Somebody is a singer, but still by practicing he improves. Somebody is a speaker, but practicing he improves. So cheshta. And last is daiva. Daiva is destiny. So, these five factors together produce the result. Therefore, Lord Krishna is saying, Ma karma phala hetu. Don't think that you are the only doer. So the idea is not that we are not the doers. We are the doers, but we are not the only doers. So this is what Krishna will get in the next verse exactly. Tatrayam sati kartaram atmanam kevalam tuya pashyate akrita buddhitva nasa pashyati durmatihi. He says, Atmana kevalam tuya. One thing, I am the only doer. He says, Nasa pashyati durmati. He is a foolish person. He doesn't understand anything. So the higher factors, Krishna is not telling in the second chapter. He will tell it later. But the principle is that one should not be attached to the fruit because we understand we are not only producing the fruits. So as we are often told, don't take credit for the service that we do. Because ultimately it is by the mercy of the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. So because we are not jnanis, so we don't go into analysis of all these factors. Shari, adhishtha, karta, karanam, cheshta. We focus on our endeavor and Krishna's mercy. So those two fingers. And that's what we focus on. But if you go into more analysis, there are five factors which are involved over it. So, the Krishna is still, and now is the first time he is told, what is this process involving? This process involves what? Doing detached, dutiful work. And then, again he elaborates the word yoga. So, translation?
Perform, perform your duty with repose, O Arjuna, abandoning all attachment to success or failure. Such equanimity is called yoga.
Yeah. So here is a definition of yoga. It's a preliminary definition. Samatvam yoga uchyate. So equipoise, that is yoga. Because Krishna has not talked about himself, so he doesn't say yoga means connecting with the spiritual. He says yoga means disconnecting with the material. Only when we are disconnected from the material, then we can be equipoised. We are attached to material things, this is good, this is bad. We cannot be equipoised. So Krishna is stage by stage revealing to it. So, be equipoised, yoga's term. Combining equipoised means success and failure. And the next verse is the source of great confusion for Arjuna, because of which he will ask questions in the third chapter. The starting questions will come over there. So, we'll come to that. But let's read this verse now. Translation. Falahetavaha krupanaha. Those who want the fruits, they are misers. So, those who are attached to fruits, they are condemned over here. That means, who are glorified? By implicit meaning, those who are detached from the fruits. So, here, in that sense, Buddhi Yoga is referring, Prabhupada translates the Bhakti Yoga, but it can also be Nishtam Karma Yoga, where one is detached from the fruits of the world. So, here, what is contrasted again? Now, Avaram Karma, what does it mean? Inauspicious work. Prabhupada translates that avaram as abominable work. Vara is benefit blessing. Avara is the opposite of blessing. So avaram karma. So actually Krishna is condemning here karma kand. That karma kand will keep you in the cycle of birth and death. So it's avaram karma. So keep all avaram karma far away by buddhi yoga. Buddhau sharanau anvichha. So see, because Krishna has a plan, he is using the word sharan. But whom you go to sharan, he is not telling over here. So, because he is slowly revealing. Buddhau sharanau anvichha. How does the word translate buddhau sharanau anvichha? In such consciousness, surrender.
Surrender to the Lord.
Prabhupada is giving us what Krishna is not giving here. So, that's why, you know, at this stage, Bhagavad Gita is very abstract and very incomprehensible. If you don't have Prabhupada, it's like, okay, buddhau sharanau. Now, if you see, there are two objects. Sharanau is surrender, buddhau is with intelligence. But whom? And which? It's not very clear. Well, what is that? Buddham sharanam. That should be buddham. That would not be buddhau. Buddham sharanam gacchami. Now Krishna will in the next verse give another. Yeah. The misers, as we know, means that they have got the treasure of human life, but they are not using it. Just like a miser, what is the characteristic? Has a lot of wealth, but he keeps the wealth locked up in his treasury and doesn't use it for even his own benefit. So like that, the krupana word means what? The soul has now got human body, the person is human form. And in the human form, one can desire higher, nobler things. But in the human form, when one keeps one's desires locked up in the box of eating, sleeping, waiting, depending, and does not desire anything higher, then he is called Krupana. For the Heritava, he just wants better anyways for eating, sleeping, waiting, depending. So that's a miser. If he has, actually the soul in a lower species doesn't even have the power of desiring something. Being the human form has that power. If you don't use that power, that's why it's called karma. Let's go ahead. Translation for
a man engaged in devotional service rids himself of both good and bad reactions even in this life. Therefore, strive for yoga, which is the art of all work.
Yes, so another definition of yoga. Yoga karmasu kaushalam. It's the art of work, kaushala, kaushala and expertise. Yeah, kaushala from here. So, kaushala, expertise. So, expert work is called as yoga. So, what is this expert work? It is the work in which work is free one from bondage. So, if he wants to work with buddhi, then what will happen? He will become free from sinful reactions. That was Arjuna's fear. Remember that I will become bound by sinful reactions. And now the next verse, Krishna will take this theme forward. And first time he will introduce a eternal conception, liberation from material existence and attaining the eternal destination. Go ahead. Translation.
Engaging in devotional service to the Lord, great riches are yogi. Read themselves and observe the word to avoid. In this way they become free from the cycle of birth and death and attain the state beyond all degrees by going back to God.
What does our Manishinaha mean? Mana Isha, one who has become the lord of his mana. It's quite difficult to do. But how does one, only when one becomes a Manisha, then one can actually be tattva, phalam tattva. That is, the man is very attached to the phalam. Janma bandha vinir mukta, you completely vinir, not just mukta, vinir mukta. And padam gacchati. Again, Krishna is not telling, maya mode will come back. He's telling, padam gacchanti anamayam. Amaya means misery. Anamayam means free from misery. You will attain like a bowl which is free from all misery. And now this is a very significant verse, the next two verses. So because all this is very abstract, that's why Arjuna asked the question immediately after these two verses. Yeah. Go
ahead.
See, actually, what Krishna is doing is here is really increasing the curiosity of Arjuna. What is this? What is the forest of delusion? In which forest of delusion my intelligence is? And what will I hear? Nothing seems to be very clear. Krishna is using, generally after Karma Kanda comes Jnana Kanda. And Jnana Kanda is Upanishad. Upanishad has this sort of language. Tattva Danta Sinurvedam Shoto Vesa. So, you know, the thing is told. What you are hearing, what you are, what you will hear. Basically what it means over here is Moha Kalila, forest of delusion is what? It is actually Vedic literature. Moha Kalila is Vedic literature. Kulashekara Maharaja's Kumasa says Amnaya Vishnanya Aranya Ruditam. Same thing, Aranya Ruditam. Aranya Ruditam means crying in the wilderness. So it is some study of the Vedic literature. Without remembering you or without knowing that you are the goal, then this person studying is like crying in the wilderness. Why? Because the Vedas are so complicated, one just gets completely lost in the Vedas. When I say the sabda jala maharanyam na bhuktaye na muktaye. The sabda jala is maharanyam. It's a big, big forest. Na bhuktaye na muktaye. You can't enjoy also, you can't become liberated also. So this is Moha Kalilam. So the Vedas, they delude our intelligence. So you know, Bahushakha Inantasha, Sethi, Buddhi. Ancha Buddhi goes from the Bahushakha to come to Ekeya. So when that happens, then what will happen? Once you have gone beyond the forest of the Vedas, then whatever promises of self-gratification you have heard till now, or whatever you will hear in the future, they will not affect. So Shrota Ugesishtpasya refers to what? It refers to Shruti. Shruti is Vedic literature. And Shruti often gives us a lot of promises of self-gratification. So whatever we have heard, whatever we will hear in the future, will not be attracted. Why? Because we have gone beyond that to a higher taste of spiritual life. And the same thing Krishna will illustrate in the next, elaborate in the next verse. Translation.
When your mind is no longer absorbed in the flowery language of avatar, and when it remains fixed in the trance of personalization, then you will have attained the divine consciousness.
Yes. So Shruti, now Shrotavyasa becomes a little more clear, Shruti. Vipratipanna. Vipratipanna, how does Prabhupada translate it?
Without being influenced by the producer.
Okay. Yeah. That means, Viprati. If you hear some Shruti, it seems to be opposite of Bhakti. Yada Thastati Nishchada. You will be unsurik. You will be undisturbed. And then samadha. So where was the word samadhi coming earlier? Samadho na vidhiyate. So earlier Krishna said samadha na vidhiyate. Now he's saying samadha achala buddhi tada yoga navavasisi. So when you will attain yoga, when you are no longer disturbed by not just worldly promises of sense gratification, but even by scriptural promises of sense gratification, you are not disturbed because you are bound to something higher. Now, okay, I have to attain yoga, I have to attain samadhi, I have to practice buddhi yoga. So I was thinking I have to fight a battle, but there is no reference of battle over here. And so, what is this person? So, he is thinking this is very interesting. It seems that I can escape from fighting. And then he says, okay, I want to know more about this person. What does he do? Because these descriptions are so abstract. So, how can I identify this person? So he's thinking, is the person a meditative, reflective sage in the forest? Or what? Because that's what it seems, you know? A lot of effective scriptural promises. That's why he asked this question in the next verse. Now, can you please tell me his symptoms? I would like to know what's the person like. So this is how this was. Arjuna vacha hita pragyasya ka bhasha samadhistasya keshava titari kim prabhasheta kimasita vajeta kim. One example where we have to use our reasoning, our anuman to look for a gauna vritti instead of a mukhya vritti. Because Arjuna is not talking about a fashion model show, how does somebody walk, how does somebody say it. Obviously, there is something more. Now you are talking about an interview for a call center where you want to know how is your accent and how is your speech. So there is some deeper meaning over here. So Chakravarti Pad explains over here that bhashyate iti bhasha. Bhashyate, that which describes a particular symptom. Like bhashya, bhashya means what? Shankara's bhashya, Ramanujan's bhashya, that is commentary. That which elaborates the symptom, that which explains is called as bhashya. So he says, this word sthapragyasya ka bhasha, bhasha does not just mean language, it means symptoms. So what does a bhashya do? It speaks through bhasha, but it actually elaborates on the central point. It explains. So bhasha, that's why Prabhupada uses the word language in the translation. But this whole purport is about symptoms. You wonder, there are no symptoms talked about in the translation, why is Prabhupada talking about it? So many times the Prabhupada actually may seem to be saying one thing in translation and another in purport. But what Prabhupada is doing is, he's actually giving us two translations. One Acharya's translation is the translation, another Acharya's translation is the purport. So Prabhupada will give you the literal translation as, what is the language? How does he speak? But then, bhasha means symptoms, and that's what Prabhupada elaborates about the symptoms. So what are the symptoms? And so now, samadhi prasya. So Krishna had earlier used the word samadhi twice, so that's why he's asking samadhi prasya. One is chosen samadhi. What is this symptom? And kim prabhasheta. So first bhasha is symptoms. What are symptoms? And he is asking for specific symptoms. Kim prabhasheta means, how does he speak in response to the ups and downs of this world? And then, kim asita, how does he sit? That means, how does he regulate and discipline the senses and control them? Kim prajeta, how does he engage his senses? So, ka bhasha is answered in 55. Prabhasheta is answered in 56-57. Asita is answered in 58-63. And Prajeta is answered in 64-72. I'll repeat. Bhasha is answered in, ka bhasha is answered in 55. Kim Prabhasheta is answered in 56-57. Then Kim Asita is answered in 58-63, and Rajeta Kim is answered in 64-72. Do we need a break right now, or should we complete this and? Complete. complete it? Asit means, how does he restrain his senses in the world of sense object? Rajit means, how does he engage his senses in proper activity, in non-fruity activity or devotional activity? Prabhashit means, how does he speak in response to the ups and downs of this world? Does he criticize, does he praise? Let's move forward. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Prajahati Yata Kaman Sarvan Parthamano Gatan Atman Devatmana Pushta Sivaratyas Padochate.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for self-gratification which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness.
So two primary characters in describing, one who rejects external pleasures and is satisfied internally. Now Prabhupada gives a definition of who is a materialist and a spiritualist. Prabhupada says, one who seeks happiness externally, he is a materialist. One who seeks happiness internally, he is a spiritualist. So same thing is two characters. Prajahati. Prajahati is actually like not to give up but to kick out. And who kicks out? Sarvan partha manogatan. By the speculation of the mind, by the gati of the mind, all these desires come up. And atmani evatmana pushtaha. So now, as we know, we will be discussing this in 6.5 more, the many meanings of the word atma. So that you are literally in the self, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self. This is a little complicated to understand. So, in the mind, thus purified, finds satisfaction in the self. The mind that is, yes, I am such a son, I don't have to seek for external happiness. Mind is purified by it. Atmanya eva anantishya. So, as we are saying, that this is actually a description of sita prajna, of a person who is fixed in knowledge. Prajna is wisdom or knowledge, fixed in that. So it's not exactly a bhakta. That's why I'm not talking about satisfaction in Krishna. All these symptoms can apply to a bhakta also. But as, and Prabhupada explains them directly from a bhakti perspective. But if you look at the verses themselves, they are not directly talking about bhakti right now. So, when a person is perfected jnana, he is also detached from the material world. And as devotees, we also want to be detached from the material world. The pure devotee is also detached from the material world. So these symptoms can also apply to a bhakta. And we can also aspire to develop these qualities. So in that sense, they can be understood from a bhakti perspective also. Yes?
It's not a realized person, pleasure.
Yeah.
Otherwise,
it can
somebody who understood
like that. Yes, it's a progress. Fixed. Fixed mentally. Now, in the next verse, I will do an analysis of the purport. Just give an example of how Prabhupada's purport was structured. We will not go into this for all the purport, but this will. So this is the first part, this and next verse are answering. Kim prabhashet. So what was his bhasha? His bhasha was that symptom is no external happiness, but satisfied internal happiness. So dukkheshvanudvigna manaha sukheshu vigata spruha vitaraga bhaya krodha vitadhir munirucchate.
One who is not disturbed in mind, even against the people's misery, or irritated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear and anger, is called stage of state of mind.
So here, Prabhupada's purpose are very beautifully structured over here. The first part, the word muni comes from. So, till here, he is called a muni fixed in mind. This is describing sthita dhir muni. Who is a sthita dhir muni? Then after that, let's say muni fixed in mind. Fixed in mind is a literal translation of sthita dhir muni. So Prabhupada describes the stotaratna of Yamacharya. Prashanta nihishesh manohataranta. And then, from here onwards he says, dukkheshva andvigilamanaha. How is such a person not disturbed by miseries? So that is from such a Pulli Krishna, he is not at all disturbed. that goes on for one sentence, are minimized to the lowest. Then, Sukheshu Vigata Spruha. Similarly, when he is happy, that's the next sentence. Able to render better service to the Lord. And the other meaning is, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So, Prabhupada explains, Raga is attachment. Detachment is, Bhaya is, we translate that as Raga and Bhaya, and then, consequently, he is not at all angry, Krodha. So, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So, Prabhupada is taking one line of the purport and explaining it. So, four sections in that purport. Is it clear what I said? So, we'll move forward. Just a sample. Now, many times, if you look at the Sanskrit and then try to correlate, you'll find there are very good correlations between Prabhupada's translation, Prabhupada's purpose, and the Sanskrit translation of the verses. So, this was basically describes his internal characteristics. He's not rejected, he's not hated, but how will this be expressed externally? That will describe in the next verse. Go ahead.
In the material world, one is unaffected by whatever good or evil he may obtain, neither praising things nor despising things. It's only fixed in perfect knowledge.
Yes. Na abhinandati na dveshti. This is his speech. He does not praise something when very good happens, and he does not criticize when something very bad happens. Oh, it's all happening by the will of destiny. Let me just accept it. So he's not. So that elation and dejection is internal symptom. And praise and criticism is external. That's what external is described now. And Prabhupada's ninth purport here, there's always some appeal in the material world. And interestingly, which may be good or evil. So he's saying good also has upheaval. Why? Because even the good distracts us from our duty. Distracts us from our salvation to Krishna. So while he is not agitated by such material upheavals, who is unaffected by good and evil, is to be understood to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. Okay, let's go ahead. Now, what is starting?
Kim
Asi. So you see the first verse itself is talking about withdrawing sentences. Very similar thing. Let's recite this.
Yada samharate chayam kurmo angaiva sarvashaha indriyad indriyad thedhya rasya prajna pratishthita.
The tortoise is fortunate because Krishna is the first example of animal to be quoted in the Bhagavad Gita. So now, what do you say? Withdraw all the senses. So this is Kim Asi. Now Prabhupada elaborately, now Krishna is just telling the prescription, Prabhupada is elaborating how we should do it. He talks about how we can withdraw senses only when we have a plan and we engage in Krishna service. They will control according to the senses. I won't go into the purport now. But one interesting sentence is, see, is Prabhupada said the senses are like serpents. And the yogi or the devotee must be very strong to control the serpents, like a snake charmer. And he's very strong without physical. Strong in terms of skill, alertness, expertise. So that strength is internal strength, by which, it's like the snake charmer has a special skill by which he can control the snake. Like the devotee has to acquire that skill, by which he can control the senses. Now, immediately after describing this, Krishna anticipates in Arjuna's mind. It's difficult. Withdraw the senses and do nothing. How is that? Krishna anticipates that obstacle and he answers that obstacle. So, he says, yes, it will be difficult unless you get a higher taste. Go ahead. So, Krishna is using a very graphic word here, niraharasya. So, actually, for the conditioned soul, sense objects are like the ahar. It's like when you are fasting on Ekadashi, you feel hungry. So, like that, the conditioned soul, when he doesn't get such gratification, he feels hungry. Guys want to see some forms. Ears want to hear some sounds. He feels, I'm starving, I'm made to fast. And interestingly, Prabhupada translates it as higher taste, but the literal is a higher vision. Param drishtva. Param is higher or spiritual vision. So, when one gets a spiritual vision, then nivartate. One will become fixed. So what is the spiritual vision? That is not described in 61. God described over here. But first, after saying, yes, when you have this higher vision, then you can do it. Otherwise, it is difficult. Now, how it is difficult? That is described in 66. So this was like a sutra that leads to the next two verses. The first describes what? That if you are unable to do this, if you are nirarasa dehina, then what will happen? You will fall. That's described in the next verse. Yeah.
The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them.
So, if you see this person, Krishna is using the word vipashchitaha. Earlier, remember in Karmaka, apipashchitaha, while describing of the people who are Karmakandis. So, vipashchitaha means what? He understands that material desires are illusory, they will give you temporary happiness. And he doesn't want to fulfill them, but still the sense is driving him. Vipashchitaha. So, very sobering words. Because Krishna is describing two qualities of this person. His intelligence is strong and he is also endeavoring. He is vipashchitaha and he is yatrato. Still he is overpowered. So it's very frightening. You know, what more can we do? You know, we endeavor and we strengthen our intelligence. But there is something more to it. What is that? It has to be process. And that he describes in the next verse. Yeah? So, here it implies that actually the key crucial element is Mattaraha, the first drop of bhakti has come now. So, if you see, Kim Asit, Yukta Asit, it's so beautiful it is, the correlation. Kim Asit, Yukta Asit, Mattaraha. It is by this, how is this it? He says it is mind fixed. Now, Chakravarti Pada is an interesting sequence in this verse. He says that this verse is talking about, generally we talk about it as a two-point formula, isn't it? Control the senses and fix the mind only. He says, yes, it's two-point formula with a third result. He says, first is sanyamya. Sanyamya means control or restraint. So first we restrain our senses, then we fix our mind on Krishna. And if we do these two things, what will happen? Vashe. Vashe means we'll conquer. So by controlling the senses and fixing the mind on Krishna, we will conquer the senses. And that will be a tasya prajna pratishtha. Now Krishna will draw a contrast and he will say, if one doesn't do this, what will happen? Next verses. So all of you know, now I won't go into the purport. Prabhupada talks about Ambarish Maharaj here. So Prabhupada just says, matpara, and he elaborates. How does one do matpara? He goes to Bhagavatam and says, how does Ambarish Maharaj has done that? This is translation. So in one sense, whatever was told in verse 60, Yatatohi api kaunteya, how the mind steals away the intelligence, that is described, elaborated in 63 and 62 and 63. And what happens, if we are not fixing our mind on Krishna, we have to think of something. And eventually, the mind cannot stay in a vacuum thinking of nothing. The mind will want some satisfactory object to think of, and start thinking of the sense objects. And from there, things will start going down. So, contemplation leads to attachment. Attachment leads to strong desire. Strong desire leads to... Now this krodha is not the krodha which comes from frustration in the attempt for sense gratification. Because here, one has developed the karma and an internal even though, I should not do this. Who says I should not do it? So it is internal anger at the rule that tells you stop sense gratification. Because if we say that later on we will see, once this growth goes away, what happens? Next verse. Translation. So actually, the fall down is described in the last trick. So for anger, who can stop? Who says that I cannot enjoy? One gets angry with the people who are restricting our enjoyment, the rules just stopping our enjoyment, and then from there comes delusion. And interestingly, Chakravarti Pada explains this Sruti refers to Sruti Shastra. That Sruti Brahmashad. We forget the scriptures, we forget the instruction. Why especially Sruti? Because Sruti contains the words of Guru, Sadhu, Shastra. So Radhakrishna Maharaj in one lecture that at our condition stage, intelligence means the words of Guru Sadhusha. Intelligence means the words of Guru Sadhusha. But our own intelligence may be useful in certain things. We may have certain skills, even intellectual skills. But our discrimination will come from Guru Sadhusha. And once the intelligence is spoiled, then everything is destroyed. Buddhinasha, Pranashati, and falls completely. So, now after describing, Kim Asti, how should you do? Yukta Asi Tamatpara. Then he will go to the next answer. Listen.
This anger, this anger is different from arising from frustration.
Okay, this constitutional anger also comes with frustration. No, in this, see, what I am saying is, when we say one endeavors for sense gratification, one is frustrated because of not getting sense gratification, not making angry. We are not talking about that. That is, you know, a boy proposes to the girl and the girl rejects it. And therefore he gets angry. So the external attempt has happened and the external attempt is frustrated. Here this crow is the internal obstacle. No. Now he's talking about whom? He's not talking about a materialistic sense gratification. He's talking about a vipaschita. So vipaschita knows that I should not do this. So there is internal obstacles there. I should not do this. But one becomes angry with the internal roots. Because you see, the external expression is coming at the end. Otherwise, the external attempt is there, the external attempt frustration is there, and then there is anger. Actually, the external attempt comes at the end of one. So, of course, this can apply to that also. That applies a general principle. But if you look at it specifically, what is happening over here is, it is talking about a psychological genesis. So actually, this whole verse, this 2 verses 62, starting from dhyayata to pranashyati, is actually starting from the mind to action. So the action has not happened till now. The action happens only in pranashyati. So in that sense, it is internal. Okay. So now, the answer is prajeta kim. So it says that, basically, follow rules and regulations of scripture. And act accordingly. Yes. We'll recite the verse. Rāga dvesha vimuktaisu viṣayānindriyaiścaraṁ ātma vaśyahir vidhe ātma prasādam adhigacchati.
But the person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses to regulative principles of freedom can obtain complete mercy of the Lord.
So, prasād. What this prasād is? It's the mercy of the Lord. Now, if you see, what are the kim vrajet? And here the word is charan. Charan is moving. So vrajet is moving. So same thing is going on over here. Indriya is charan. In the senses are moving. So the senses will move towards the sense objects, but one restrains them. One regulates them. How? By vidheya atma, by following the scriptures. So the scriptures, actually what do? They don't take away all sense gratification, they regulate. There are two things, there is regulate and there is eliminate. Here Krishna is not saying you eliminate sense gratification, you regulate sense gratification. So, if you are told to eliminate sense gratification, you can't do it only. So regulate sense gratification, regulate within the vidheya atma. That's a regulative principle of freedom. So the soul wants to be free for enjoyment, but okay, free within the regulation, not beyond that. But what happens is, within the regulation, our rag will take us out. So now we cannot go out. And within the regulation, some things which we will not like. Just like our regulation is prasad, it will take food, but our prasad is not, if not food is eliminated, food is regulated. Regulated means that we take only prasad. Now sometimes our tongue may drag us to something which is not prasad. No, rāga dvesha vimukta istu. But sometimes within prasad there is something which you don't like. And again, rāga dvesha vimukta istu. So rāga vimukta istu, dvesha vimukta istu. So this is Vidheya Atma, and that is what will happen? Prasadam. So, Balde Vidya Vujan translates Prasadam as purity. You will attain purity. And this purity is Atmanya Eva Atmana Tushyas. Once the purity is attained, what will happen by that? Next verse describes that. Go ahead.
So one does that is why each consciousness is the object of existence, no longer.
Yes, intelligence is soon well established. So now this whole theme was of Buddhi Yoga. వ్యవసాయాత్మిక బుద్ధి. దశరథుని బుద్ధి పర్యావతిష్ఠతే, బుద్ధి ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్. సో దట్ ఇస్ ద బుద్ధి ఎస్టాబ్లిష్డ్ ఓన్లీ ఆఫ్టర్ ఇఫ్ వన్ ఇస్ జస్ట్ బిజీ కంబాటింగ్ 3-4 degrees, దిస్ ప్రాబ్లమ్, దాట్ ప్రాబ్లమ్, దాట్ ప్రాబ్లమ్, అండ్ ద బుద్ధి కెనాట్ థింక్ ఆఫ్ ఎనీథింగ్ ట్రాన్సెండెంటల్ ఆర్ హయ్యర్. So therefore, and why this misery, that misery comes along? Because we are chasing after material desire. So once one gives a material desire, this automatically happens that the less material desire we pursue, the less material miseries we experience. Just like now most of we have become brahmacharis. So you know, to for a large extent, a large material misery of working and earning a living, that is gone. So one material desire we gave up, a large amount of material misery went off with that. So when this happens, భాగవతం తదార్హస్తమో భావ కామలోభాదేశ చేత ఏతేరుక్షణావిద్దం స్థితం సత్వే ప్రసీదతి. సో ఓన్లీ వెన్ రజస్తమో వన్ ఇస్ ఫ్రీ ఫ్రమ్ దాట్ అందరం సత్వ దెన్ వన్ బికమ్స్ ప్రసన్న. సో హియర్ దిస్ ఇస్ డిస్క్రైబ్డ్ నాట్ ఇన్ టర్మ్స్ ఆఫ్ బీయింగ్ ఫ్రీ ఫ్రమ్ మటల్ డిజైర్, దట్ డిస్క్రైబ్ ప్రసాదే సర్వ దుఃఖాన, బట్ అలాంగ్ విత్ ఫ్రీడమ్ ఫ్రమ్ డిజైర్స్ కమ్స్ ఫ్రీడమ్ ఫ్రమ్ మిజరీస్. వన్ బికమ్స్ చియర్ఫుల్ అండ్ ఫిక్స్డ్ ఇంటెలిజెన్స్. And now again Krishna will teach by contrast. And he will say, if you don't have this buddhi, what will happen? Let me discuss in the next verse. In one sense, this verse and the verse 60 are very similar. But they are different. We'll discuss how. Yeah.
One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental feeling nor a spirit mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace?
Yes, ashantasya kutasukam. It's a very important theme. We can use this in our preaching to people. If your mind is disturbed, how can you be happy? People are in so much stress nowadays. So their mind is ripping them internally. How can ashantasya kutasukam? So, this is not the verse, the next verse. Krishna is telling that, first of all, he said you will not be happy, and second is, you will be dragged out. Yes, go ahead. So now, this verse was similar to the earlier verse, Hitato Yapi Kaunte, isn't it? There also the talk of sense control was there. But the difference is, here, the senses are concentrating on the sense of Indriyana Vicharata. So, Kim Raje, that is going on, that section is going on now. There, what was happening? Hitato Yapi Kaunte Purusha Prashita, Indriyani Pramathi Haranti Prasavandana. Senses in their boundary, they pull away the intelligence and they drag a person down. And if you use the example, Vayur Navam Vambasi. So actually in the ocean, the person may have his oars, the person may be skilled also, suddenly a strong wind comes. There's nothing to hold on to, you can hold on to a wall or something if a strong wind comes. But there's no wall to hold on to in the ocean. Just drag. And then the person gets dragged away by the waves of material desire. Kulshekhar Bharaj is it. He says very graphically, you know that a bharavara, he says, compares to a wife to a whirlpool. He looks dry away. And you can see. Can you translate? And the point is that basically mohor mimale, that the waves of illusion are there, and that the crocodiles of the relatives are there, and the whirlpool of wives is there. It will suck you down completely. This may sound very, for the modern mind, it may sound very sexist. You know, why is a woman being condemned? But Maharaja has explained that for a man, a woman is a woman. For a woman, man is a woman. It's basically the sense of Jesus is talking about. Vayur Naval Vambasi. And now, in the next verse, Krishna thought of this is a call for action. What should you do? Therefore, control the senses. Translation is okay?
Yes. Yeah. 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 Why do you want to take the respect from the wrong? That is your
Yes. Now, the significant word over here is sarvashaha. Nigruhitani sarvashaha. Because the previous verse was what? Indriyana vicharatam yanmano anumiyate. Even if one of the senses, contemplative sense of it, doesn't drag you out. Therefore, this, all of the senses should be controlled. Sarvashaha is all the senses should be controlled. And the person control level, tasya pragyam pratishthita. Now, after describing this, Krishna is going to elaborate a contrast. He is going to contrast the people who control their senses and people who don't control their senses. You know, for materialistic people, sense gratification is their dream. And the idea of controlling the senses is completely, not only alien, it seems stupid to them. So Krishna said, yes, there are two categories of people. And these two categories of people are, from this context of point, what is the comparison going on earlier? Between karma kand and karma yoga. So, between those material sense gratifiers and those who are sense restrainers. Those are compared in the next verse. Because Arjuna's question was, what are the characteristics of the Sitapragya? So, first he described the characteristics of Sitapragya in terms of what he does. Now he will describe the characteristics of Sitapragya by comparison with those who are not Sitapragya. Go ahead.
What he tried for all the time of the king of the
So again, the sun rises and sets at the same time forever. So Isha cannot refer literally to night. Isha refers to the sphere of inactivity. So the night, one is inactive. So sense gratification is the sphere of inactivity for the transcendentalists. But Jagrati Samyami, that is the sphere of activity for the materialistic people. On the other hand, spiritual advancement, Krishna consciousness, it is the sphere of activity for the devotees. But for the materialistic people, hey, what do you do? Even now my relatives ask, you know, whole day you stay in the temple, what do you do in the temple?
Only
getting temple,
going
and take
that's it. So, you know, whole day is not enough for us. That's how many things to do. So, people can't understand. 10 days are also not enough. Yeah. Okay, so, after describing this, then he, he describes how is a person controlled. So, there are two categories of people. Now, after contrasting, he will say, further elaboration. So, still now, you should control your senses, he has described. But the practical application he has given is only one thing, matparaha, by touching the mind only. Krishna will give a further elaboration of how to control the senses with an example. We'll recite this verse.
Apuryamanam chala pravisham samudramapa pravishanti yadva tadvakamayam pravishanti sarve sashanti naknoti nakamakami. So, now this is a very interesting analogy, but again, what is the practical application? Yes, first flow into the ocean, and the person who is like, who has ocean like heart, he is not disturbed. So normally, what happens is, desires flow outwards, isn't it? Desires flow towards the sense objects. But Krishna is saying desires flow inwards. It's not desires flowing inwards, it is the impressions from the sense objects which flow inwards, but nothing flows outward back. Just like normally if there is a pond, a river will flow into it, and then everything will flow. Not just the water inside, everything will flow outflow in all directions. So, what Krishna is saying is, yes, the sense objects, their impressions may come inside. But nothing will flow out. How will that happen? Because the person's own heart is not like a pond, it's like the ocean. And how does the heart become like the ocean? By placing Krishna, who is Prema Sagar, Ananda Sagar, in the heart. So, if Krishna is not in the heart, then our heart is like a puddle. There is no internal satisfaction. We are always looking outside, outside, outside. And then any material desire will drag us up. But when we place Krishna inside our heart, we become satisfied. So, that means Krishna is hinting at that matparaha through this example of ocean. And then, further, so this section is more talking about negation of material desires. It is not talking so much about positive spiritual desires. Because what happens is, that generally if a person is overrun by material emotions, for him to develop spiritual emotions is very difficult in that time. Therefore, Arjuna is overcome by material emotions, and therefore Krishna is saying, go beyond emotions. So the bhakti that is described in the Bhagavad Gita is more of an analytical, intellectual, detached bhakti. It is not the kind of bhakti which say, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is chanting, dancing, singing, shedding tears of ecstasy. You won't find that in Bhagavad Gita. Because although bhakti is the same, but the description here, Arjuna is overrun by negative emotions. So the emotions are causing him to break down. So to become a bhakta means to become equipoised. So here, most of the descriptions are more from the point of view of equanimity towards material ups and downs. And that's what Krishna will describe in the next verse. Translation.
The person who has given up all desire for sense gratification, who lives free from desire, who has given up all sense of desire and is devoid of all things, he alone can attain real peace.
So, vihaya kamanya sarvan, and gives up all desires. So, Prabhupada in this and the previous purport is an interesting point. One, he may get desires, but he has no inclination to fulfill the desires. See that matters? Yes, that is the proof of a Krishna conscious man. One who has lost all inclinations for material sense gratification, although the desires are present. It's a very interesting phrase. That means the desires are there, but the inclination to fulfill the desire is not there. So, Acharya described that by the practice of bhakti, one develops faith in Krishna and parallelly one loses faith in Maya. So, when one loses faith in Maya, then Maya may still propose, because Maya proposes the desires will come. But because we have lost faith in Maya, we are left, the desire is not satisfied. And that's why the inclination to fulfill the desires is not there. The desires are there. Just like after we become devotees also, all the holdings are there, advertising all the sinful pleasures. But what happens? We are lost faith in the holdings. This won't make me happy. This won't make me happy. Buying a car, buying a house, or smoking, drinking, doing all this. So the desires may still come, but the inclination has gone away. That's vihaya kamanya sarvan. And this is actually a very lofty level of title. Nirmamo nirahankaraha. So, janasya mohoyam aham mameti. So, mama and aham. So, nirmamo nirahankaraha. Krishna talking about. So, shanti adhigachiti. Now, Arjuna is still, in his frame of mind. If I am a Siddha Prajna, will I fight or not? I said, shanti. Oh, I should not fight. Shanti. I also want shanti. Krishna also doesn't want shanti. So Krishna is hearing everything, Arjuna is hearing everything, but in the background is still a question is there. So should I fight or not? And actually if you see, these verses, what are the last verse also? Sa shanti maapnoti ra kama kami. This was also, sa shanti madhigachati. I don't have any kama for the kingdom. I have no kama, so I will become shant. I will not fight no more. That's how Arjuna interprets. That's why it said, when we speak, the audience hears only 20% of what we speak. And God knows which 20% it is. So Arjuna catches this. And the last verse now?
That is the way of the spiritual and godly life, after attaining which man is not ready. One is just different than the hour of death. One can attain
the kingdom of God. Brahma Nirvana Adhigachati. So, the Brahman Nirvana is not literally the kingdom of God. Prabhupada gave us the devotional translation. Now, Nirvana is the Buddhistic idea. But, the Buddhistic idea, Buddhists love the word Nirvana, and the Mayavadis love the word Brahman. So, the Krishna is mixing both. Brahman Nirvana Madhigachati. So, Brahman Nirvana, the spiritual liberation. What is the liberation? What exactly it is? So, as I say, that Krishna is using voice terms which are not very clear. The same Brahman Nirvana will come in 6th chapter. Brahma, Hamsam Adhigachati. Injan Evam Siddhatmanam Yogi Vigatakalma Yuginyatamanasa Shantin Nirvana Parama mat samstham adhigacchati. So shanti nirvana karma. So then they will come nirvana and then mat samstham. So there Krishna will make it pretty clear what it means. Now Prabhupada in this purport makes a very significant statement. The first sentence is like, one can attain Krishna consciousness or divine life at once within a second, or one may not attain such a state of life even after millions of births. It is only a matter of understanding and accepting the fact. Understanding and accepting. So now Krishna has concluded his instructions. In this way, he has not only talked about how you attain peace, but you will attain the eternal destination also. What the eternal destination is, he is not very explicitly mentioned, but he's talking about eternal destination. And in this way, we come to the end of the second chapter. Now, yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, that's a technical discussion. I'll explain this. Krishna is using Brahma in a feminine gender over here. Eshate, not Brahma Siti, Brahmi Siti Partha. Which is very significant. Nowhere else does he Krishna use Brahma in a feminine gender. So Brahmi Siti, so Acharya explained, actually this refers to the shelter of Radharani. Brahmi Siti means the shelter of Radharani. Eshate Brahmi Siti Partha. Nainam praptya vimuhyati. Once you are attended, there is no more illusion. There is no more illusion at all. Sitva asyam antakale. Now actually, first time Krishna is talking about antakale. The significance of the antakale. That way if you see, Radhana is mentioned in a coded way. The spiritual destination mentioned in a coded way. And also, the importance of the last human is also mentioned. In that sense, the important concepts of the Gita for attaining the eternal destination are mentioned. But they are all mentioned in a coded way. Now what are the characters of Sutra? Sutra means everything is there, but in such a way that you can't see it only. Sutra is there, so some acharyas have to reveal the experience of Sutra. In that sense, this word is called Sutra. Okay? So, I did a search. I couldn't find Brahmi anywhere else. Brahma is there, Brahman is there, but Brahmi is not there anywhere else. So, Garupalta explained this in his book also, Brahmi Siddhartha. Now, I have a shock for all of you. According to our schedule, we have to complete 3 chapters. Not true. So, we are just more than halfway. The third chapter is not all that long. So, we have 2 options. We can just end for today and we'll try to make up later. Or we can have a break for 5-10 minutes and we can have for half an hour. Then we should complete third chapter. We can complete half, I think, today. There are 36 verses. So, we should be able to complete 16-17 today. So, if you're very tired, we will try to make up tomorrow. Whatever you can miss. Okay, today is Ekadashi, we will wind up today. And, okay. So now, another question for all of you. See, the way I took it today, I did not go too much into Acharya's commentaries, and I focused more on the flow and the analysis of the Gita itself. So, as compared to the morning class, did you find this better? Or both were similar, or you did not notice any difference on it? Similar. Okay. So tomorrow I am using another format. today, if you know, what was the main difference? Today I did not use. It was mostly speaking and discussion. We did not use the notes too much. Now the book, the Sanskrit verses with their markings and everything. We did not use too much the flow also. So tomorrow I will try a third thing, that is a PowerPoint. So we have used PowerPoint for the Ishwar mission. So then, after tomorrow's morning class, tomorrow morning, in 2 hours, we should be able to complete the third chapter. It's not a very long chapter. And after that, you can compare these 3 formats and tell me which is the easiest. You know, we can have verses and translation with the flow marker in them, or we can have oral discussion more, or we can have a PowerPoint. And then you find that. Well, for me, preparing it will take more time, but for all of you, for speaking it will be the same thing. థ్యాంక్ యూ వెరీ మచ్ ఫర్ కైండ్ అటెన్షన్. శ్రీమద్ భగవద్గీతకి, దీపావళికి, గౌరవ భక్తులందరికీ జై శ్రీ కృష్ణ. Yeah.